last time I was with Edgar, you know, he was at the My Staffing. But he left to come and, of course, be serving you guys. But since then, you know, my life has gone so well. I've added a bit of weight. You know, my cheeks are even showing up. I don't know how much of that Edgar had to do with, but whatever it is, I'm so glad that you guys have Edgar with you. Now, this morning, I'm super privileged to be here, not just by myself, but with my family. It should be a picture of them, like, super smiling up there. My wife is Muthoni. She's like this, oh, don't worry, meet her later. Anyway, she's like incredible and one of the most creative human beings I ever bumped into. And also we have a two-year-old daughter. She just like shines the light of our lives, literally. She turns them on every morning because we are like super groggy in the mornings. And she sleeps and then she wakes up and comes to her bed and starts bouncing on it. And we're still working on it. But as I have my family, they're like really good people. We've been married for 4 years, right? Yeah, good one. So I've been married for 4 years. No, so I am privileged to be with my friend who's like a super phenomenal worship leader, you know, a leader by her own right. And definitely, as we learned last night, very, very strongly opinionated, you know, and her name is Aggie. And so that's like my family. And this morning, I just want to start by telling you, for the past 11 years, I've given my life to serving university students and inviting them to live the way of Christ and to see how they can find their lives within the very larger story that God has for them. And the beauty of serving are people on transition, I mean, because they come in first year, and at most 6 years later, they transition out, you know? So you have the heartbreak of always having to learn new people. But one of the gifts of people on transition is that then when they come out and they succeed, then they invite you to participate in the amazingness of what they are doing, which is like what's happening this morning, you know? This is like one of the amazing experiences that I get to participate as I see how God is using these guys that we've been investing in within campus ministry, as it were. But also they come back to me with greater news. So this, I think a month or so or a bunch of weeks ago, my friend Richie, you know, Rick Richard, this guy who's like been dating this amazing girl. And so he decides, or he comes to me and tells me, I want to propose to my girl. Right? And of course, that's exciting. And I get my juices flowing. And so we start talking, how are we going to do it? Do you have a ring? We make sure the guy has a ring. We make sure that the girl is available, you know, so she's still there with him. And so we start unfolding this thing. And I had the perfect place for her, for him to do this proposal. Turns out my other good friend is a manager of a coffee farm that's called Fairview Estate. And it's like this amazing coffee farm place. And I was like, this is the place you need to go take this girl. And not just to the coffee farm, but within the coffee farm, they have this incredible waterfall. And so just like, I could just picture it. I was at the very same coffee farm just a bunch of months ago, and I could imagine, you know, just how she'll be taken by this amazing waterfall. And before she knows it, you know, Richie will put on his suit and whatever, and you go on his one knee, and she'll turn, and she'll be so confused, she'll think it's heaven, and she'll say yes, you know? The entire goal is to get the girl to say yes. Once she says yes, you know, who cares if she remembers it or not? You know, then we'll put a ring on it and we'll say, you are ours, you know? So anyway, so like Richie gets excited about this stuff, right? And so I think last week, my wife and Richie, they get to go to this coffee farm to just do a recon, you know? See this amazing waterfall that I've been talking about and everything. And I was just waiting. We're going to Fairview. I'm like, yes, Richie is going to buy into my vision. Anyway, so they bump into the manager. Her name is Millie. And Millie tells them, oh, man, the sad news is you can do your proposal anywhere here you want, but the waterfall is not prepared for you. Which is like, what? Let's go see the waterfall. And so she takes them to this amazing waterfall. But this time round, instead of it being like as amazingly beautiful as I'd imagined it, it starts out with, it has this toxic smell coming out of it. And then before long, Millie starts telling them, you know, what happens is that as this farm, which borders this sort of river, like since we have this devolved government and they need more land to be grabbed, these guys have been grabbing the riparian land across the river from where we stay, and they've been building these humongous houses. And partially because it is within this county, Kiambu County, the drainage system can't handle all, you know, all that comes with these extra many houses. And so in some weird way, these guys who were building these humongous houses, were these influential people within this county, have found a way to channel sort of their drainage system into the water. And so inevitably, this water now, this waterfall is no longer like the express I had in mind. It now you can, you know, she would just be wondering why she's there with that incredible toxic smell. And that's like really sad for Richard and his proposal to come up with a different idea. But the sadder reality is that there have been people who have been relying on this river for generations, for their cooking, for their washing, for everything that we do with water. And now they are stuck. They have to find a way to look for water. And in this particular coffee farm, they have been using this particular river to irrigate their coffee bushes, as it were. And since now the river has turned into this toxic thing, they can't use that same water to irrigate their coffee. And so inevitably, they have to buy water, which is expensive. And so this farm is running losses of millions of shillings. And it's a business. So at some point, they have to deal with the hard questions of, do we close this business? But then they can't close this business because it turns out that when the current owner bought this farm from the very initial person who had owned it, that person has been had it within her control for who knows how many years. She had these people who were already residing in the farm, and she said, instead of you leaving, how about you continue staying on the farm and working over here, and I'm going to pay you. And so Millie is telling my husband, and so we can just up and close this farm, because it will mean disaster for these particular families. And it's just this thing that keeps spiraling. And why does it do that? Just simply because you have these influential, super rich people who could afford to buy land somewhere else, but of course, grabbing is always cheaper. And so they have been doing that, and this is also the chaos between them. And I listened to that this morning. For me, it took me to how our narrative as Christ followers starts in Genesis 1. It's an incredible story that starts with God creating different things and saying, let there be, let there be. It sort of finds its culmination in day 6 when God comes together and says, let us make man in our image and likeness. And it tells us the next thing is like, so they made man and woman, and they were made in the image and likeness of God. And today, our focus is the very next verse that comes, which is Genesis 1, verse 20. And it says this, that in this particular thing, after God created them, God blessed them. And he told them, be fruitful and increase in number. Fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky and over every living creature that moves on the ground. And so our story starts with that being made in the image and likeness of God, but also starts with this incredible blessing. Something that to some degree we have taken rather way too seriously. Like this poet and activist and novelist, Wendell Berry, is going to tell us. Wow, we can't hear it. So you have to.
The objective, the soil building, the rock blessing. Those who had wanted to go home would never get there now. I saw the forest reduce the stumps and the gullies. I saw the poisoned river, the mountain cast into the valley. I came to the city that nobody recognized because it looked like every other city. Men and women and children now pursue the objective as if nobody ever had pursued it before. The once enslaved, the once oppressed are now free to sell themselves to the highest bidder and to enter the best paying prisons in pursuit of the objective, which was the destruction of all enemies, which was the destruction of all obstacles, which was to clear the way to victory, which was to clear the way to self-creation, from which nobody who ever wanted to go home would ever get there now. Love unloved, every vow unsworn, to make way for the passage of the crowd, of the individuated, the autonomous, the self-actuated, the homeless, with their many eyes opened only toward the objective, which they did not yet perceive in the far distance, having never known where they were going, having never known where they came from.
So you want to check that out. That's a trailer to this documentary about this Wendell Berry character. It's just like really fascinating. And it's almost a glimpse of what goes wrong when we take this verse too seriously and completely misunderstand it and apply it to just simply mean we just are supposed to dominate and have dominion over everything regardless of what the consequences might be. And I know when what comes to your mind when you hear this story about this river in this particular farm, I don't know what comes to mind when you probably listen to Wendell Berry say of how we have become the very agents of destruction within our planet. I know what comes to mind, like the Nation newspaper, just I think a couple of, maybe last week or so, there is this incredible series about just how toxic our rivers have become. And they sort of traced all over the place. It started with Earth River, and then they went to Nairobi River, and then they went, skip next. And then it's like they started with Earth River and all its toxicity. They went to Nairobi River and how it's become toxic. They went into this particular dam that is being built to take this water from Earth River, but because this Earth River is already so toxic, so they named it the dam of, the sewerage dam. Because like once they trap the water, it can't be used. And then they moved on to how using that same toxic water to irrigate our plants and everything else, it leads to our harmful diseases, and then how, of course, we end up in hospital. This whole thing, I don't know what goes through your mind when you read things like that. And this, it's not just about the environment degradation. I could tell as such sad stories about the unemployment crisis in our country. I could tell the same stories about the brokenness of our families within our culture. I could tell you stories about ways in which the very gadgets that we hold in our hands is wreaking havoc in our relational capacity. I could pick literally any one thing and we could go down the same line. And I'm just walking you on this sort of dark trajectory. It simply come back to this, which was so excited, is one of the core values of this community, which is if we need a community, we need communities of people to come together and to move against this destruction and be communities marked by generous living. Which I'm told is one of the core values here. So it's incredible that you as a community are already being formed to become the kinds of people who are not marked by destruction that goes on in our society, but who are marked by bringing life to the same creation, to the same world, because of how generous you live your lives. In this context, I'm not just simply talking about acts of generosity, but I'm talking about how your entire life is organized. Is it a generous gift to this world? Because we have so many people whose lives together and say, we are going to live our lives as a gift to this world, to the people around us. That's what I want to challenge you to. And how might you go about this? And then different ways and approaches to go about living your life in a generous way. But someone challenges us that maybe perhaps it needs to start by re-understanding the very blessing that we were given by God at the beginning. Now, what was going on there? And some guy called someone Michael Brown. He tells us that this may be a Christopher Brown, sorry. This may be a different rendering of the same blessing given by God. And he says that we should frame it maybe this, that be fruitful and have children, filling the earth with your life. Filling the earth with your life so that you can have power to fight against everything in the world that leads to death. And you're supposed to rule with care and fairness over the natural world, over the myriads of my beautiful creatures, from the tropical fish to the soaring eagle, to dogs, to cats. Every creature that is part of this living world. Maybe this blessing was not simply meant to be, you do whatever you want for your own satisfaction. It was meant to be, do a great job ruling this world for the benefit of yourself, yes, but for also the benefit of everything within this world. So maybe it might start by us reimagining what our rulership and our stewardship of this world looks like. But it also pushes a little bit further, because the more we wrestle with that, the more we wake up to the reality that it's a huge, huge responsibility. It's a huge responsibility that we take too lightly. That you are blessed by God to be part of the co-stewarding of this creation. It's incredible, my friends. And so these are the author called Brian McLaren says it even more poetically and much more poignant. And she says it, that it's a huge responsibility, because we can use our intelligence to either be creative and generous or to be selfish and destructive. You are intelligent. It's you who has to choose how you're going to maximize on it. But also, not just our intelligence, the next line, we can use our physical strength to either be creative and generous or to be selfish and destructive, which is something that so many people coming of abusive families would attest to. That these species that are supposed to be sources of strength end up being the very thing that destroys them. And moving on to the next one, and he says that we can use our sexual, do we need to touch on that? We can use our sexuality to be generous and creative, or to be selfish and destructive. And also, we can use our monies, our work, our time, and any other asset we have to either be creative and generous or to be selfish and destructive. My friends, that is your responsibility. Every single one of us, we get this responsibility to choose what we do with the gift of our life. We can use the very gift of our life to either be creative and generous or to be destructive and selfish. I'm sure you know so many people who use their very gifts of life to be selfish and destructive. Could it be that you would choose to join the kingdom of God people who are marked by using and maximizing their lives to be generous and creative? It's a huge responsibility. It's a huge responsibility. And it's a responsibility that we need all the help we can muster to figure out how this gets done, in a sense. And sort of learning this, like, we, of course, is supposed to lead us to Christ, right? And Christ is this model who keeps capturing and helping us reimagine how can we live all these blessings that we have received from God. And this night when he is betrayed, and they are gathered around an amazing table like this for this particular meal. And at a particular time, you know, Jesus washes the disciples' hands and feet. But also what Jesus does is that we are told that he takes this bread. Not like this, it must have been like humongous, you know. Then he takes this bread. I mean, it's supposed to serve 12 men. It's like 12 or 11. 12 men at this particular point. I mean, so it's this humongous bread that he takes and he breaks it. And he says, let's read it from the scratch, right? When they were eating, Jesus took bread, and when he had given thanks, he broke it and gave it to his disciples, saying, take, this is my body. Take and eat, this is my body. And then he took the cup, and when he had given thanks, he gave it to them, saying, drink from it, all of you, for this is my blood of covenant, which is poured out for you, which is poured out for many for the forgiveness of sins. And this communion that I'm told we take every Sunday in this congregation, it's so rich and so many dynamics. But for today, I want to invite you to consider ways in which this table invites us to join Jesus in the modeling of how we should be creative and generous in the ways we live. And one of the authors, I love them, was his name is Ron Rohazer. He says that way, that we participate in Jesus' sacrifice. So power of this table is an invitation to participate in the sacrifice. But anyway, we participate in Jesus' sacrifice for us when we, like him, let ourselves be broken down. When we, like him, become selfless. My friends, the Eucharist, the communion, as a sacrifice, it invites us to become like the kernels of wheat that make up the bread and the clusters of grapes that make up the vine, which are broken down so that we can become part of the communal loaf and become a single cup. And that's my invitation to you, my friends. That is, you wrestle with what does it mean to live out this our value of generous living? That you find in Jesus already a model that says, please come, be broken, be poured out for the goodness of this world. But what practically, what does that mean? Practically means that we are invited to choose to be broken and to be poured out every single day. And that's not like complex. We go to work and we show up at the workplace very rejuvenated. And ideally, we should come back home a little bit exhausted. And what's our process look like? That process simply looks like we have been pouring ourselves out. We have been broken continuously by serving the people that we serve, by following the projects that we do. And we come to the end of the day as this sort of broken people. Or like you could use another metaphor, which is like, have you bumped into any young person? I mean, you should see my two-year-old. She has energy for all of us combined and some more. And it's this cycle, and she gives it, and she jumps around and connects another. And then at some point around midday two, she just done. She's been broken, and she's been poured out for the life-givingness of everybody around her. And now she needs to sleep and be refilled. And I think that's what Jesus has sort of in mind, like, come out and be broken and poured out. Which is easy to understand, because most of us, we do that as almost default. Maybe it moves a little bit further and says, not just to be broken and poured out, it needs to be also, no, it's supposed to be back, beyond us and ourselves. Because it's easy to be broken, but it's also easy to be broken for us. If you're to hang around those guys and ask them, what's going on? The guy's grabbing the land on the other side. They'll probably tell you a story about their family and how they want to build this home for their family. So they could tell you, I'm being broken and poured out in my grabbing of the land for the sake of my family. And we're very good at that. And I'm saying the word beyond us, which means it includes ourselves, it includes our family, but it needs to rise more than that. What is for you beyond you and yourself? What is beyond you? For the sake of others. Because let's be honest, there are so many people in this world who are being broken and poured out beyond themselves and others. But however that beyond themselves and others, however it manifests in the world, it manifests itself as hurting other people. And so we need to just ask ourselves, as they're being broken and poured out beyond ourselves, is this for the goodness of our neighbors? Is the way you live your life a blessing to your neighbors? Who is your neighbor? But not just that. Is the way you're being broken and poured out for the goodness of others, of our neighbors, but is also good for our enemies? That's what it means to be a Christ follower. We are invited to not just love ourselves, love our neighbor. We are supposed to push further and say, how does this impact our enemies? Who are your enemies? Of course, you're not a Christian, so you don't have enemies, right? But it's a different question of asking, who is the other in your world? Who is the other in your world? And then finally, is the way you're being broken and poured out, being good to the creation, to this home that all of us are invited to inhabit. So, my dear beloved friends, I invite you to live your lives as a generous gift to the world. We are desperate for this, my friends. We are desperate for this. How we frame it, going by the songs we sang, we say, we are desperate to see the kingdom of God manifested here. And that kingdom of God manifestation, it's a partnership. And maybe God already showed up by blessing you to rule this world, to be a steward of this creation. And whether you have gainful employment or ungainful employment, the very fact that you're breathing, that blessing is yours. Find some place that you can start being a generous gift. Being a generous gift. And so I pray that when the story of this town city is written, that it will be said there was a community there that shifted the tide of the darkness that is so prevalent in our world because they chose to live their lives in a particular way. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Mm-hmm.